Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you. Hosted by your local Labor MPs.
Kia ora koutou, ko Julie Ferry, toko ingoa, ko puki tāpapa, puki wiwi, te maunga, ko te awanga, te awa, ko manakau te whanga. Tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. Kia ora, my name is Julie Ferry. I'm the Deputy Chair of the Puke Tāpapa Local Board and one of five Roskill Community Voice Reps on that board of Auckland Council. I'm also part of the City Vision Centre-Left whānau. And joining me today, I have another member of the City Vision Centre-Left whānau, but I just have to do my regular spiel before we get on to her. Very pleased to have her with me, so anticipation. Let's build it. I have a regular spot on Red Alert Radio and I'm very keen to get your feedback. You can find me easily on social media, both Twitter and Facebook. Just search for Julie Ferry. That's spelled F for Fred, A-I-R-E-Y. We also have a Red Alert Radio Facebook page. You can search for Red Alert Radio, AKL, and you should find us. We put up links to the podcasts of these shows once they're available, as well as other bits of useful news relevant to the show. Now, I tend to talk with local board members and community types from different parts of Auckland. You can hear all of those interviews and ones from our other hosts online at planetaudio.org.nz. Look for Red Alert Radio under R in the programs list. Some of my episodes have focused on exploring the value that a left progressive approach can bring to local government and our communities. And I'm returning to that theme today with my special guest, Denise Roche. Denise's iwi is Ngāti Raukawa and she is Ngāti Huri Hapu. And she is also City Vision's candidate for the Waitemata Local Board by-election, which is on right now. Denise has a very long history of elected service in both local and central government, having served as a Green Member of Parliament, as well as an Auckland City Councillor and a Waiheke Local Board Member. She is a staunch advocate for local decision making, for the environment and for workers' rights, and many other things too, I should say. I just picked the top three that came to mind. And she's after your vote this month if you live in the Waitemata ward. Thanks for joining us today, Denise. Great to have you here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Cool. Now, first up, thinking back to when you very first stood for local government, what motivated you to put yourself forward?
Well, I had been an activist probably my entire life, from about the age of 10.
Yep.
And I had the really big good fortune to do one of the papers that I was doing in my graduate diploma in not-for-profit management here at UniTech to undertake my study in Papua New Guinea.
Wow.
And so I was hanging out with 25 community activists talking about governance. And there was sort of like a whittle placed on the ground to all of us, which was become a decision maker.
Yeah.
Step up. And I realised that the life that I led in my wonderful, happy community of Waiheke Island, living off the grid with my babies, baking bread, being the absolute hippie kind of cliche, that there was more that I could be doing to affect change.
Yep.
And that's why I stood for council and I won with 11 votes as a majority.
Wow.
So I'm here to tell you that every vote does count.
Absolutely, yeah. And there's someone else who's currently on the Waitemata local board who we tend to call 10 vote Tava, your ticket mate Vernon Tava, because he just sneaked in at the last election too. But once you're in, you're in.
That's right. And it's actually a really good place for service, you know, for affecting change. And a lot of people really just don't understand how local government works.
Yeah.
They tend to get sort of see the glamour of central government politics, but forget that there's all this influence and decision-making that happens in local government that we could all take more of a part in.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was interesting you said there about, you know, the widow, the challenge that you faced of putting yourself into that leadership space. It's something I very much grappled with as well, was recognising, actually, I am a leader. And that's okay, which I think is sometimes as women is sometimes something that's a bit of a challenge, is to accept actually, no, I am a leader, I am going to be a leader, I'm going to lead.
Yes, and particularly if you've got children, as well. So it takes a bit of getting your head around of having these two different, quite distinct roles. But actually, they support each other beautifully.
Yeah.
I'm a better leader because I'm a mother, because I'm a parent, because I'm an auntie, because I'm a sister. Those relationships really formulate the way you interact with people and how democracy plays out, essentially. You know, how you make decisions if you've got this whole sort of network of people that you're connected to.
Yeah, I've found that too, that being a mother, being a parent has really influenced the way I approach some things, and I hope for the better. I got re-elected, so I think I must be doing okay, but yeah, it's interesting because it is such a topical issue at the moment with the Prime Minister being pregnant of, you know, can you do both these things? Well, actually, women have been doing both these things for a really long time.
Yeah, absolutely, and more. So, yeah, I think it's really exciting, and it certainly sends a very clear signal to women right across the world that that families and work and leadership are not mutually exclusive.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, thinking about Waitemata, why are you standing for that local board in particular? You've previously been on the Waiheke one, so what's drawn you onto the ferry, across the water to the Big Smoke?
Well, I've lived on Waiheke Island for the last 20 years, and I did actually serve on the first local board there as well. And certainly that's what I see as my papakāinga currently. But I'm an Aucklander. I was actually born in Helensville, and I've lived in and around the central suburbs for around about 30 years, more than 30 years. I went to school here as an adult student at Auckland Girls Grammar. I went to Tech, AUT, and did my journalism there. I went to Auckland University. My son went to Western Springs. And the streets hold my memories, and they are, this place has formed me.
Yeah.
And I'm connected to Auckland City on a daily basis. It's where the ferry comes in.
Yeah.
I had an office here for the last 6 years, and it's kind of part and parcel of who I am. And I feel very passionate about our place because it has the potential to be a fabulous place to live, work and play. And there's been some amazing improvements made over the last 10 years, particularly with our existing local board, the work they've been doing around streetscapes and infrastructure for walking and cycling particularly have made it so much better.
Yeah.
I mean, I bike now. I'm 54 years old. And I wouldn't be biking in Auckland City without the infrastructure that's been developed as a result of the advocacy from the local board.
Yeah. So I think that's interesting to reflect on. You talked about the change you've seen, particularly over the last 10 years. So how's your view of local government changed over your time of watching it? And also, how has your experience in central government as a member of parliament sort of influenced that as well?
Yeah, well, it's been really interesting. I adamantly opposed the forced amalgamation there.
So did I.
Yeah.
And yet here we are.
And yet here we are. It's that kind of thing, are you going to be inside the tent and pushing out, or are you going to continue to be outside, not being terribly constructive about it? And so my choice is to get involved. But there are structures that were set up by the Super City amalgamation, which I think have been absolutely detrimental to community engagement and basic democracy. So, Auckland Transport.
I knew you were going to say that.
Everybody's going to say that.
Yeah.
I think everybody's got a terrible experience with Auckland Transport. Unelected, unaccountable. They do stuff which I don't know how they do stuff, but frequently there's very little input from ordinary people who are affected by the decisions that they make and the infrastructure that they build. And consequently, you've got half the rates going to this organisation, and it's the local representatives that cop the blame for it. And that's exactly what's happening with some of the mistakes that have been made around infrastructure, cycling infrastructure, particularly in Old Mill Road and Westland.
Yeah, and it's funny because my own experience has been that where the local board has been really involved in an infrastructure, a transport infrastructure project, where the local board has championed it and also sometimes run but certainly supported consultation processes, things have gone better.
much better. And you get that buy-in. And I think there's this imposition kind of culture that comes from Auckland Transport, which we need to really push back on. Mm. Now, that was the result of central government meddling. Really, it was central government that set up the forced amalgamation, that set up the CCOs, that set that system up. And I think it's done no favours for improving democracy. What we're seeing is, you know, a reduction in the turnout for vote for local government.
Yep.
And what I'm finding when I'm door knocking people is this sort of distance that people have from the decision making, so they don't think they can influence things, and that I think needs a big shake up.
Yeah, I think some of the things that have happened in the Waitemata local board area that local board has driven have I think been really well focused on how do we make this more understandable, how do we make this more real. I think of in the first term the beating of the bounds. I don't know if you remember that, but it's an old tradition. I think goes back to English parishes or something like that. And Pippa Coombe, the current chair, was very hot on it. And so basically what the local board members did was they walked around the boundaries.
Oh, yes, I do remember this.
Yeah, and they've done that again. And it is just that, you know, consciously, physically showing people this is where the boundary is. It's not just a line on a map. And not saying, hey, it's a wall. You know, acknowledging it's permeable and it doesn't necessarily mean that much to people outside local government, but just acknowledging this is the boundary, you know, this is where our authority begins and ends. And there's little things like that that I think really help in quirky ways to get across that message.
Mm.
So thinking about the Waitemata local board in particular, what are the strengths you think you'll bring to that local board? How do you think you'll work with the existing board members?
Oh, I think I can work really well with the existing board members. The fact that five of them are City Vision elected representatives is a plus. So we're bound by a shared set of policies.
Yeah.
And I think that creates a cohesion which I think it doesn't, you know, get rid of tension or conflict if it arises, but it certainly is there as a base.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really good starting point. The other thing is that I know most of them really well. I've worked with Richard Northey on the council. I worked with Cheryl's partner, Glenda.
Yeah.
I've known Pippa for a very long time as well, and Vernon, as Tava, was a former Green Party activist. Office holder, and Rob I've known since he started as well. So I feel like I'll slot in pretty well.
Yeah.
The strengths that I think I can bring to the board, because I was looking at the makeup and thinking, what have I got that no one else has?
Yeah.
And I guess my big passion is around waste.
Yeah.
You know, I've been talking rubbish for years.
Yeah, yeah.
It's my well-recycled joke.
Yeah.
You know, the impact of on our marine environment of like what's happening with our stormwater drains, you know, and that's impacted by how much public place recycling we can offer, and what kind of cleanups we've got, and what kind of education we're doing. So there's sort of some work that I feel that I could be adding to the board around waste minimisation, which I think I'm really hoping that I do get on so that I can get stuck in about it.
And that's a really good fit too with Adriana's area of expertise, because she's more land-based but very much into recycling of what would otherwise become waste products with her pallet work and stuff
yes,
like that.
Yes, resource recovery is her thing. It's you know, so the reuse options. And there's some great stuff that's happening right across the city that has really sort of come out more and more in the last few years. The repair cafe that's you know, that Grey Lynn is going to be running. All those sorts of things actually have a huge impact on how people view waste.
Yeah.
You know, you see that you can reuse stuff rather than just dispose of it. And we've really got to shift away from disposability, because it's just, we're drowning. We're absolutely drowning in plastic soup.
It's that product stewardship and design end as well. We've got a couple of guys actually out in Wesley who I should introduce you to, who run a social enterprise called Critical Pixels. And the most recent product they've been working on is actually coffins made out of repurposed wood. But the issue they've had is finding glues and solvents that will biodegrade and stuff. So it's really it's a good challenge as well as a good opportunity, do you know what I mean, for people who are creative thinkers to think their way through a problem and, okay, how do we get the right materials? How do we put this together in a way that actually means that the end of life, and in this case, very literal end of life, is as sustainable and leaves a smaller footprint as it can.
Yeah, that's right. And I think we've had a country that's had very little regulation around end of life of products.
Yeah.
And consequently, I was at a workshop yesterday with academics and marine biologists talking about plastic pollution. And the latest research shows that 23% of the fish that was caught around New Zealand last year has ingested plastic.
Right.
And we're talking microfibers from polar fleece and
microplastic. Yeah.
Yep. All that sort of stuff. And it's scary. It's actually really scary. And we've got to just turn the tap off in terms of our plastic consumption.
Yeah. The other thing I was thinking about with the strengths is your relationship with central government, and given that the Greens are now supporting a coalition government that's in power, do you feel that's something that will be of use?
Yeah, I do actually. I think the amount of influence that central government has on local government is quite immense. And I think, you know, the role of councils and local boards is to advocate on behalf of our communities. And frequently we have to advocate to central government. So to have, for example, the ear of ministers, you know, the housing minister, for example, you know, Phil Twyford, to look at some of the housing issues that we've got here and affordable housing issues and homelessness. Yeah. Having access to that ear of those politicians, I think, is a really big benefit. From my point of view, with the waste thing, the minister is Eugenie Sage, the Green Party minister for Associate Minister for the Environment.
Yeah.
And that's useful too.
Yeah. I haven't... Eugenie's probably the Green MP I know the least about. How have you found her to work with in the Green caucus? What do you think the possibilities are there to issues to raise with her from an Auckland Council perspective?
Oh, really good, I think. She's actually from Auckland originally. Her parents live here.
Oh, right.
Yeah, around St Heliers area.
Yeah.
So she's, you know, she's based in Christchurch, but she's up here as her family, you know, as her parents are getting older, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think she's got a real connection to the place. She also has a local government background herself.
Yeah.
She was one of the Environment Canterbury regional councillors who was actually sacked by the
Government.
Yeah, by the previous government.
Yeah.
And she's got a very, very strong grounding in the Resource Management Act.
Great.
So, I think she'll be a real asset to us here as well.
Yeah.
And she really cares. You know, she's Minister for Conservation. So, you know, the marine environment is really, really close to her heart as well.
Yeah. Interestingly, I saw a couple of days ago there was a suggestion that we need a Green Party that isn't irrational about things like climate change, meaning doesn't think climate change is a real thing. And I saw someone tweeted a comment on Twitter about the sort of irony of having a Conservative Party that doesn't want to conserve anything. And I mean, my rejoinder to that was, well, yes, if you're talking about conserving white privilege and patriarchy and capitalism, then they're quite into conservation. But it is really nice to now have a Minister of Conservation who doesn't, for example, think Agapanthus is not a pest plant and things like that. So
She knows her stuff. That's the thing. You know, she's a life member, I think, of Forest and Bird as well, and has a long history there. Climate change is, you know, it's playing out. We can see it.
Absolutely. And just the weather.
Yes.
You know,
And
I've just been earlier today in New Lynn, and the mall there has obviously had quite a bit of flooding. And, you know, I mean, they've had this terrible incident out Cascade Falls. And, you know, the weather is changing. You just have to look outside.
And councils, it's the councils that are actually dealing with the impacts of it and the costs of it as well. So as sea levels rise, etc. But, the impact of slips, the impact of the stormwater and the pollution that goes out into the harbours as a result, all those sorts of things. And now, you know, what's happening, you know, the tragedy on the weekend with the loss of life. It is time, it's absolute time, it's beyond time for us to actually be doing stuff to reduce our emissions so that we can actually just try and manage what's happening now.
Yeah. And I think that's where Waitemata plays a really key role, because in a lot of ways as an area, it's kind of the showpiece of the whole Auckland region, in that, it's where a lot of people travel to, so there's the transport aspect of emissions, and it's also somewhere where increasingly people are going to be able to live, hopefully in ways that have less impact in terms of the heating side of emissions too. So I guess I'm thinking about, you know, the role that the local board has in championing those aspects and how you see yourself contributing to that.
Well, I think we need to be really championing good design and good public spaces as well, because as we intensify and we have more people living in the city, and we're already seeing it, but we don't want a city of slums, you know?
Yeah.
We want people to have a decent standard of living and good quality, affordable housing. That means that we should be advocating for good design as well. But I think I really think the council could be doing more in terms of provision of housing. I've been door knocking in the what used to be the council flats, which I think John Banks gave them to Housing New Zealand, 15 years ago or something. And with the previous government, essentially they've just let them. There's been very little maintenance, but it was affordable community housing where people who are actually a community, and it makes a big difference to a neighbourhood when you've got a diverse range of people living there. So even the very well-to-do people in the same street were saying they love having Housing New Zealand accommodation down the road there. And that's what we need to be doing. We will be advocating, and we have been. I know the local board has been advocating for good quality mixed housing that actually suits everyone's needs.
One of the key things that I think that kind of mixed housing approach leads to is a school, local schools, where you have a real mix of children, different backgrounds, different ethnicities, different life experiences. And what a leveller that is for children at a young age to sort of understand that not everyone is like them, and that, you know, their lives may be different from how they are now as well, you know.
Mm.
And that's certainly, I mean, my kids are at a Decile 2 school. It's great. I just love it. And my experience back when I worked in the edges of the education sector was that pretty much all the schools are really good schools. Decile's means nothing. It just means the income of the neighbourhood. And, but we have had a lot of stratification, and I think we possibly see that more in Waitemata than we maybe do in other parts of Auckland as well, where certainly we seem to be getting more schools where there's lots of families with high incomes or lots of families with low incomes, not a lot of those mixed schools in the middle. And I know one of the issues that people have talked about is whether there needs to be another school in Waitemata as well, another primary school, with all the space issues. But I don't know, does local board have a role in that? Or is that something you sort of say, hey, central government, this is an issue, but we leave it to you?
Well, I guess it's part of the advocacy role as well.
Yep.
And, you know, door knocking and talking to people, what I'm hearing is that there is more and more pressure on the public services that are already there.
Yeah.
That the schools are getting, that actually we need smaller schools so that people have more of that one-to-one kind of education that kids thrive on as well. So again, it comes down to how where it's placed and how it's designed, and how the city the intensification occurs. So that's a huge purview for councils and local boards, and we should be advocating around it, because otherwise you do get that situation where you've got all the rich people living in, you know, Herne Bay,
yep.
and then you've got sort of pockets of, well, very few pockets of poorer people in the central area, because they can't afford to live there. They're all living in Mount Roskill.
Yeah.
Right? So you get that kind of white flight kind of thing happening.
Yeah.
And we know from, you know, social scientists that without that kind of mixing with each other at a young age, it just entrenches inequality and that kind of white privilege that can be very pervasive
yeah.
for very well-to-do families and people.
Yeah, and it's something I actually went to private school for the last 2 years of my high school. And yeah, it's something I've seen firsthand. It's an interesting, perhaps, topic for another time.
It is. Well, I was really lucky because I went to Auckland Girls Grammar as yeah. an adult student when I was 21 in
wow.
the 80s. And that was a really mixed, culturally very mixed environment. And being an adult student as well, it was quite fun.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me always the contrast between Auckland Girls and the school I prefer to call Auckland Boys Grammar.
Oh, yeah.
That Auckland Girls is seen as somewhere that is diverse and empowering and, you know, particularly, you know, sees the role of women as future leaders and contributors, whereas Auckland Boys Grammar, not so much. But look, what else are people raising on the doorstep? You've talked about
parking
and parking.
Parking. Ah, oh, I hate
close to your heart parking.
I hate parking.
Tell us about parking.
Well, particularly in some of the you know, central suburbs, what's happening is that residential parking is being squeezed out by people who are driving into work and parking in the residential area. So then the introduction of residence-only sort of coupon yeah. parking can, some people feel very strongly that that it's a charge on them.
Yeah.
And I haven't actually had anything positive said about the way Auckland Transport's handled residence parking at all.
Oh, dear. It's tricky because it's that hide and ride stuff where
yeah.
you drive most of the way into the city
yeah.
and then you park on a residential street and then you catch a bus or you walk or a train or whatever in the rest of the way. And I have to say, it happens further out too. My area, I quite often hide and ride, but it's not in the numbers. And so it's not pushing people off the residential streets. If you've got a visitor, for example, there's still plenty of places
yeah.
for a visitor to park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the streets in Arch Hill, you know, Home Street and Potato Street, all those sorts of...
Yeah, very small streets.
Very, very skinny
yeah.
streets. And the houses don't have off-street parking.
Yeah.
So it creates quite a bit of resentment, I guess.
Yeah.
And I guess the answer to it is more public transport, more frequent public transport for people who are coming into the city to work.
Yeah.
And we've got to kind of build that so that people will use it. But at the same time, we have to manage this until
that's
that
right.
happens. So
yeah.
it's kind of chicken and egg thing. But so there's never any happy solutions about parking, I have to say.
No, parking's pretty tense. So Denise, how can people go, oh, like the sound of this, what do they do next?
Well, if you're in the Waitemata Local Board area, you will have received some voting papers in the last week, hopefully. And if you haven't, you can ring elections or go to elections.org.nz and sort it out. But you can contact me. You can find me through the City Vision website, which
yep.
is www.cityvision.org.nz.
Yep.
My contact details are there, including my phone number.
Great.
Or if you've got a pen, you can write it down, just 021 180 2506.
And the biggest thing you want is?
I want people to vote. Just vote. It has to be in the post by the 14th of February. or dropped off to your library before midday on Saturday, the 17th of February.
So there you go, Valentine's Day. Show your love for your city. Show your love for Denise and City Vision and pop it in the post. Thank you so much, Denise. It's been wonderful to have you in. And thanks for listening, folks. Love to hear your feedback. And a reminder, you can listen again to this interview or any of our back catalogue via the Planet FM website, planetaudio.org.nz. Check out programs and We Are Under R. Plus, you can check out our Facebook page. Search for Red Alert Radio AKL. This has been Julie Ferry for Red Alert Radio. Ka kite anō.
Get together with your local MP next week at 9:05 a.m. Or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/RedAlertRadio.